podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And today we are discussing again an issue of housing, an issue of discrimination, and it is something that we've covered on this podcast before, the issue specifically of traveler discrimination, traveler exclusion, and also, I think importantly, traveler solidarity, people across this country who want to be and act in solidarity with travelers and to create an inclusive republic, diverse, that respects everybody and everybody can live with dignity. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Breda Donoghue from the Cork Traveller Visibility Group. Breda, thanks so much for joining me today on Reboot Republic.
Thank you, Rory. Thanks very much for the invite. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I just want to say that it's really important, and I'm really grateful that you have come along, because I think that there's really an absence of traveller voices in the public and media debate, isn't there?
Absolutely. It's not a very level playing field when you look at the bigger picture. You know, travellers have been advocating and very organised for many years now, but as you can see yourself, look, it's a struggle, and we always seem to get a couple of steps forward and we get knocked back a couple of steps again. You know, so it's a very slow process, and we don't have the advocates that we would like to have on the ground, but we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you feel it's changing at all? Do you feel that there's a change in Irish society underway, that, you know, there's more people acting in solidarity who want to challenge the discrimination, who want to stand with travellers?
I do. Rory, not at the speed that I would like that I would like it to be. You know, the Traveller Visibility Group has worked in solidarity with community groups around the Cork City and County since its inception, you know, and we work very closely with our colleagues in the settler community. And I suppose what really stands out for me is I'm also a traveler cultural awareness trainer, you know, and I deliver training right around the city and county, and sometimes nationally as well. And the level of the amount of people that come up to us and say they actually didn't have a clue what's going on for travelers on the ground, you know. But also what's very disappointing is sometimes when you look at the likes of the behavioural and attitude study that was done quite recently as well, you know, the stats from that are very poor, where travellers are faring out, you know, some pretty gruesome stuff being said about travellers online, and then you look and you wonder how far are you getting along with the advocacy piece and also the training side of things, you know, you're wondering who you're reaching, what audience are you reaching with this level of training?
Yeah, I saw that survey, like it really was, you know, it was disappointing. It was sad. It was just disgraceful. I actually don't have some of those figures to hand. You don't have any of those figures to hand, do you?
I don't have them at hand, but look, they were shocking. I suppose is the best word that I could use. I suppose for us as travellers, the most shocking part for us is that we weren't shocked at all, because we're living that. Yeah. We see that every day on the ground, you know.
Yeah.
We face that level of racism and discrimination every day. So it wasn't shocking to us, which in itself was a bit upsetting, you know.
Yeah. And just maybe could you explain a little bit of what you were saying in terms of the Cork Traveller Visibility Group? You know, you explained your role in terms of your advocacy. You're going around doing culture awareness. You know, what sort of groups would you be doing that with?
Well, we would do it with any service provider that travellers will come in direct contact with, particularly frontline staff, you know, but we've gone beyond frontline staff as well now. It's a very unique type of training, you know. If we get a request coming from, let's say, the HSE, well, the training can be very much tweaked around health stats around travellers. It works the same way in accommodation or education or in employment, you know, or just sometimes you can get a very generic session that people just genuinely want to know more about traveller history and culture. But I suppose in our project, the project is coming up 30 years old right now. And I suppose the whole reason that the project was developed in the first place is because travellers were very concerned here in the city on how travellers were being treated and on how travellers were living in very poor conditions, you know. So we have quite a broad project. We have, within our project, we have a drug and alcohol team. We have a primary healthcare team. And we also have tree development workers that work with travellers around the city the likes of Spring Lane, Mahon, Knocknaheeny, Straight Road. You know, we have four very big sites that are quite overcrowded on the, in the city. And so we would work very closely with those travellers, but we also work with the homeless travellers in the city that don't have any physical space to stay unless they're couch surfing in the back of their parents or they're in homeless hubs around the city and county.
Yeah. What sort of, and we'll come on to talk about that because that's what I do want to talk about in terms of the conditions on some of the halting sites and the recent report done by the Ombudsman for Children and then the response from Cork County Council. But just firstly a bit, what, maybe to give us a brief few minutes, what would you say when you're explaining to people the history of travellers in Ireland? How would you explain it?
Yeah, well, look, there's a very long history of travellers in Ireland. I know myself, when I went to school, I was told that travellers were people that fell off their lands during the famine. You know, that's not true. We have evidence to show that there has been travellers mentioned in our history books as far back as the 5th century, long before Cromwell, you know. So we didn't fall off our lands during the famine. And there's also this myth and perception out there that travellers are like, I suppose, tedious people that want to, are always out to get somebody or, you know. We have a very long history within Irish society. And we, up until the early 60s, would have worked very well alongside the settled community. You know, travellers worked in solidarity and in harmony with the settled community. I suppose it's when travellers started to come into the cities and they became, I suppose, what was mentioned in one of the first policies that came into play was that they were a bit of an eyesore and that they were problematic people. We needed to be rehabilitated and saved from ourselves. And I suppose the big thing was assimilation, you know. And we as a community have been fighting that policy for the bones of 60 years now, you know. So we have been saying from the very beginning that we are different. We have our own culture, our own identity, our own traditions and values and customs, you know. So, and but state law is telling us different with over 60 years, and we have been struggling and resisting that for that amount of time. And that has in itself had a big impact on my community. It has had a detrimental effect on our health stats over the years. Yeah. So, yeah.
And just before we get, because I want you to explain a little bit about that assimilation policy and what that was. But if we go, maybe sketch a little bit about pre that time, what was the kind of role did travellers play? What did they do in society? As you were saying, what was that difference? What, you know, that they were working alongside within, what did the travellers do?
Absolutely. Travellers are nomadic people. They travelled around the country and they worked economically with the settled community. For example, they worked alongside of farmers. They did seasonal work with farmers. They were also great tinsmiths, and they would have provided that service to local farmers. They also had rebuilt up relationships with communities, and where they would bring news from one area to the next. You know, they also traditionally travellers would have attended fairs, and they would have bought and sold at fairs. They kept horses. They dealt in horses. You know, they traded horses. So there was a number of different things that travellers would have did pre 1960s and the state policy. I suppose to give you one very quick example, a number of years ago we took on a genealogy project where we covered the last 100 years of 7 sisters. And what I suppose one of the shocking things for us was that each of the 7 sisters lived until their late 80s. Now, they were born in the turn of the century in a poorhouse, in a workhouse. Yeah. And they lived into their late 80s. And none of their descendants, the majority, I could say 90% of their descendants, didn't get past the age of 65. So we've been dying younger, or as the state has been telling us, that if we move into houses and settle, our health will get better. That didn't happen. We've actually been dying younger since the start of the previous century, where these 7 women survived very harsh conditions, had very large families, and still managed to live to their late 80s, where our average age is 65. Like I probably here in Cork City, we probably have 5 people over 65 years old. You know, that's that's shocking.
Yeah,
you know. It is. So yeah, and that's the kind of I suppose that's the kind of stuff that for us told us that the way we lived was working better for us. You know, we lived a nomadic lifestyle. We lived within the extended family. We had we shared the same beliefs and values and norms. We've been like, if you take a piece of cloth and you slowly start pulling away the threads, that cloth is going to disintegrate. And that's what's been happening with our culture over the years. Different pieces of it being pulled away over the years, and travelers finding it difficult to try and hold on to the vital pieces of their culture, which, like I mentioned earlier, is having a detrimental effect on not only their health, but travelers' and mental health also has been severely affected.
Yeah, it's an incredible idea and incredible, you know, way of thinking about it, to think that back in the poor houses, you know, mm-hmm. traveler women lived longer than they do today.
That's right.
It is utterly shocking and shows
absolutely. And we have the evidence to prove that, you know, like when we took part in that project, we went around to graveyards where we knew these people were buried. Yeah. And we were very shocked and surprised to see, to gain that information that they were actually lived way into their 80s. And my mother was laid up from when she was 60 years old. She was dead by the time she was 70, but she was dead from she was gone much earlier than that, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stats that we have. And travellers are still living at least 15 years less than the settled man or settled woman, you know. Our infant mortality rate is 3 times higher than the national average. Our suicide rate is 7 times higher. And if you think that we're less than 1% of the population, you know, and we have those stats. Now, we did an All-Ireland Traveller Health Study was done in 2010. The previous health study was done in the very early 80s and nothing changed. Everything was the same for travellers. You know, now I know that's 11 years ago, but we could say now as travellers, but also as travellers that work in travel organisations, those stats are worse. You know, things are not getting better for travellers. Life expectancy is not getting better. Living conditions is not getting better. You know, mental health is not getting better. Our suicide rates are gone through the roof. We have at least one a week.
Yeah.
At least here in this area, you know. So
That's just shocking. Horrendous. It's absolutely. Like, it really is unacceptable. And, you know, mental health is talked a lot about and increasingly, you know, in our society. And, you know, we know we have a pandemic is called, mm-hmm. it's the pandemic running along with the pandemic and, you know, mental health. And what are the kind of particular, I suppose, aspects of those mental health? Like, why is that suicide rate so high, that death by suicide among travellers? And what are the particular mental health sort of issues and challenges that travellers face?
Yeah, well, look, it's a complex situation. But I will say this, if we work from the social determinants of health, and if you look at the social determinants of health, then one of the main determinant of health is accommodation. And if your accommodation is poor, that is going to affect every other area of your life. You know, we have people living in conditions that are so poor that they don't have the physical time or energy to try to improve any other area of their life, be it their accommodation, be it their unemployment, their education, their health. You know, they're dealing with racism and discrimination every single day. We have young boys out of school at 12 years of age without being able to read and write. That's not good enough. We also those young boys are not getting involved in any of the local youth groups. They don't have any traditional work to follow like their dads did before them, because all of that is gone. So what you're left with, very young boys with nowhere to go, no money, and no possibilities, no prospects. You know, that's just one side of it. There are so many different causes to what we feel is the problems within travellers at the minute around mental health. But we always come back to accommodation. It always comes back to that. You know, the amount of travellers that are displaced because of an act that came in 2002, the Trespass Act, that completely decimated travellers and traveller nomadic lifestyle. You know, so on one hand, you had a policy that came in that prohibited travellers from being nomadic. And on the other hand, you had local authorities around the country not producing any more traveller-specific accommodation. So I suppose we could be what you call the squeezed middle, in the sense that we were forced then into private rented. But that's not always accessible to travellers, because landlords in general won't rent to travellers, you know. And the ones that do be lucky enough to acquire a place have to do so under the pretense they're not travellers. So they can't invite any family members over, because they're afraid the landlord will find out they're travellers. So they're living in isolation for the first time in their lives. They've grown up in a very supportive networking setting, family setting, and that's been taken away from them as well. You know, so it's a number of different factors all rolled into one.
Yeah, no, there's a lot there, Breida. You know, it's interesting, I think, and important that idea, listeners understand that social determinants of health idea, which is that, you know, these different factors that impact on our health, because often, you know, something like mental health, you know, or even suicide is looked at, well, what's wrong with the individual, rather than looking at the structural and the environmental factors that affect that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to remember that travellers in general are dealing with not just it wouldn't be just a local isolated incident of racism. Travellers are dealing with systemic racism. So in every service that they need to be at or to attend, they're dealing with that. They're dealing with a mindset that travellers are not different, that they're one size fits all, and that's not working. It has never worked for travellers, and we have been advocating for that over the years, that one size doesn't fit all, and by treating everybody the same, there is actually major inequalities, but not everybody's coming from the same place. You know, it's not the same. It's not a level playing field where travellers are concerned.
Yeah, no, it's clearly not. And just on that, the accommodation, and because it's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about, and it's so good to talk to you about the other, you know, that broader education and history, which is great, because I think we do need to talk so much more and get an understanding of that, you know, traveller community and background and role in society. And in particular, and I do want you to talk about the Assimilation Act in the 1960s, because I think that is fundamental that people understand what happened back then. But just in terms of, so what happened in terms of the Ombudsman for Children, maybe you can explain in terms of, to give listeners a background, the Ombudsman for Children visited a number of or in particular one halting site in Cork, and made a number of recommendations on that. Do you want to maybe explain?
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem. I suppose, Rory, I thought the history around that is that happened over a 3-year period, where the Ombudsman for Children worked very closely with the Traveller Visibility Group and the Cork Traveller Women's Network and the families on Spring Lane site. It was a 3-year investigation where they met with individual children and families, and also with the local authority, also with the HSE. And I suppose it came to light in May of this year, I think, where the report was published. And it was quite shocking, you know. If you peer it back, it's something that we have been saying as travel organizations for quite some time. And I suppose just a little bit of history on Spring Lane. Spring Lane was built in 1989 as a temporary accommodation, you know, for 10 families. Fairly basic, you know. It now has around 44 families. So for the last 30 years, it has quadrupled in size. There are over 100 children living on that site with no play area, have to pass through probably like a rocky climb to get to school. And they're surrounded by, and particularly in the winter, a sewage lake. And we haven't even started on the health and safety issues on site, you know. So that's been going on for some time, and we as organizations have been advocating for the families. Now, I need to say, I suppose, in to be fair, it's a very complex situation, and it's not an easy situation to resolve. Now, at this stage, it's difficult, but because of the poor management of the site for the last 30 years, you know.
Yeah.
If the site had been better managed by the local authority for the last 30 years, we wouldn't be where we are now. But it's not just Spring Lane is in that condition. There are other sites around the city that are very poor condition as well. And I suppose if you look at the number of sites, the last additional traveller accommodation that was built in Cork City was 1990. That's 31 years ago. Now, there has been two replacement sites of two very old sites that was in Cork City that was really dilapidated, and they were replaced. So the same families came out of those and went into the new developments. But there's been no addition to traveller accommodation, despite the fact that there is meant to be a yearly count of travellers in the area and a five-year plan to put into place to accommodate travellers in the area going forward. That didn't happen. It hasn't happened. We're on our fifth plan. That hasn't happened. There's been no addition to traveller accommodation. So I suppose the report came out in May. We welcomed the report, obviously, and we thought it was great that, look, we went to the families and we sat down and we said, look, this is not just another report, because God knows these families have been, I suppose, studied and researched to boot at this stage. Yeah. You know, there's been report after report after report. So we, as travel organisations, went to the families, sat down and had real conversations that we felt that because the local authority had accepted the report, had accepted the recommendations and were willing to work with ourselves to make sure that these recommendations were implemented. We went to the families and we tried to build that trust between the families and the local authorities. It was very disheartening last week to find out that the local authority were actually contesting the report and felt that the findings weren't accurate and they weren't clear and they weren't fair, you know. So that's very disheartening. Families are very, I mean, I suppose morale is very low among the families, again, thinking, Jesus, is this really happening again after all the time and effort that we've put in? Not only that, but we have our staff teams that have worked round the clock with the families on this to get this report out there as well, you know, and it's very disheartening. And like I mentioned earlier, it's like when we get two steps forward, we get kicked five steps back, you know, and it's soul destroying, to be honest.
And were you surprised that what Cork County Council wrote to the environment that was revealed?
I was, in one sense, and I'm kind of kicking myself that I was, because I probably shouldn't have been, but I was surprised because we were actually working closely with the local authority. We had sat down on a couple of occasions and tried to have a real clear discussion and come up with a plan. And I thought we were actually starting to build a relationship with the local authority, and that everybody was in the same place and that everybody wanted this to work, you know, because if you look at the report is about children.
Yeah.
And we highlighted this after we had met with the local authorities. That was kind of our center. It was about the children. Let's not discuss all the other issues that we've been talking about for 30 years, bring it back to the children and how the children were living on this site. And we wanted to move forward from there. So I was a bit surprised, but I shouldn't have been.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems it's very difficult, you know, when you see the state refusing to accept responsibility. And to me, it's disgraceful, you know, that the state has clearly, you know, failed travellers over and over, and more than failed, breached, you know, your human rights.
Absolutely.
And then just to not even acknowledge, you know.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Rory, for us, it's coming back again to political goodwill. You know, we have an issue, a major issue with traveller accommodation because of it's a law or a policy or whatever, Part 8. I don't know if you've heard of it or not.
Yeah.
We just can't seem to get around that. So basically what we have to go back and tell the families each time that we're looking at trying to develop a good quality traveller specific accommodation site, we have to go back to the families each time and say, we can't get this across the line because the local reps in the area won't vote for it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Just to explain, Part 8 is how social housing is developed by the council itself. True, it doesn't have to go to planning permission, but the councillors, the elected councillors, have to vote for it and put it forward.
Yeah. So we have been, travel organisations around the country has been calling on the minister for quite some time now to override this, like, you know, and we all know that city managers have emergency powers that they can use as well, you know, and we have been talking about that as well. Nothing will ever change until we get rid of Part 8 with regards to traveller accommodation, you know. If you take Spring Lane Halton site, I was one of the first families onto that site in 1989. I left it in 1994 because it was so severely overcrowded.
Yeah.
But traveler families have been living in that area for over 60 or 70 years. I myself know that my grandparents lived in that area in Spring Lane itself 70 years ago. You know, my mother would have grown up in that area. And yet there was new developments popped up around the area. And now the local reps for those areas won't support the development there, you know, and that's very frustrating. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. If we don't have the political goodwill, if we don't have the political clout, and certainly if we don't have sanctions because traveller accommodation is not happening, if we don't have sanctions for that, we're at nothing. We're wasting our time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very, very, it's not acceptable, and it absolutely needs to be changed. Just on that, the children, because I think that's an important, you know, it was an important step in development to focus on the children, I think, because it is an important way, and because people can, it can be a way of overcoming prejudices, you know, because people have so many blocks in their heads and ideas and wrong, you know, ideas. But when you think about children, you know, it equalizes, I think, and people... Maybe you could just paint a picture a little bit about, you know, what was the experience of children that was presented and that, you know, the lived experience of children in that report?
Yeah, well, look, we've been working with those children for the last number of years. Some of the children that we would have been working with 10 years ago have their own small babies and toddlers up there now, you know.
Yeah.
And it's shocking. Like, children don't have the same... I suppose the same comforts that the average settled child would have. You know, children are living in damp, wet conditions. They're living in mobile homes that are not fit for purpose, you know, quite old. Some of them could be living on a unit or a shed that's on the side, like a makeup bedroom, you know. Electricity cutting out all the time because there's too many people connected up to an electricity supply. And sometimes water pipes and blocked because there's so many people using the facilities up there, you know. And they're the good days, you know.
Yeah.
And there's only one access road out of that site, and that's a hill. So if you have a frosty or snowy day, you may not get out of it at all, you know. They have a refuse collection that could happen every week, maybe, or sometimes 2 weeks or sometimes 3 weeks, you know. So the conditions are very poor up there, and children are feeling it now more than ever because, I suppose, especially because of online stuff, what children are seeing now when they're attending school, and they're noticing that other children are doing different things and they can't get involved in that because they don't have the facilities. They can't invite children home with them to be able to look and see how they live and show them a bit about travel culture. They don't get that opportunity because they're embarrassed. You know, and embarrassment is a big thing now for children living in those conditions because they're wondering, well, why me? Why are we living in this condition? Why do we have to suffer on like this? And when nobody else does it, apparently, in that area, you know?
Yeah. No, it is. And you're right in terms of that embarrassment on children is a big impact and has big. Again, you look at the mental health, of course, you know, absolutely. Mental health issues and impact on that as well for children and self-esteem.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose those kids are living in such crowded facilities. They don't have a play area. There is nowhere for them to vent. There is nowhere for them to walk to be able to have a bit of space to themselves. Or there's no play area, like I mentioned, but it's not even about a play area. There is basically nowhere for them to go other than their own caravan, you know. So it's shocking to look and think that people are still living in those conditions. We still have children. Using up until just pre-pandemic, we still have children that was using the local swimming pools to have a shower and using the local libraries to do their homework in the winter time. You know, that's not good enough.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely not. Breda, in terms of how do you see it, what do you think needs to happen now in terms of the accommodation?
Well, like I mentioned, Rory, we could be here in another 10 years and we could be saying the same thing because trust me, I've said what I said to you here today 10 years ago and I also said it 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Until we have proper sanctions in place that make sure that local authorities are stepping up, we're at nothing. And until we get some way around Part 8, particularly the planning law, Part 8, we're at nodding. But not only that, like I mentioned earlier, we are dealing with systemic racism. The whole idea around travellers has been to assimilate, you know.
Yeah.
That's the state policy that was put in place in the early 1960s. Assimilate, 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 you know. And this concept that we are a broken people and that we don't know how to do anything for ourselves and it's up to them to fix us, you know. Until they get that over that mindset and get around it and start to see us as valued Irish travellers, you know, as citizens, I don't think all the talking in the world is going to make any difference until we get sanctions in place and get look at real policies that have a real effect on how travellers are treated and how travellers live and how travellers want to live.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I know there was some work been done around a Traveller Housing Association. Do you know, has that been developed?
Yeah, well, look, we have a Traveller Housing Association called CANA. And it's very good. But look, as I mentioned, it's tedious, it's slow, it's to work mainly with smaller groups, you know, to try and support smaller family groupings around traveller specific accommodation. It does work well, but it's not getting, I suppose, the recognition that it needs to get. And I suppose it's not getting the support that it needs to get. But it is something that we would support a lot. And we do feel that stuff like that should be happening, that and more of that. You know, we shouldn't just have one specific area around looking at traveller accommodation. It should be something all local authorities should be taking on board.
Yeah, yeah. No, it absolutely is. And again, you know, the Cork County Council failure to take responsibility for, you know, its responsibility and the state's responsibility in terms of travellers and what has happened. And because it is a right to housing. And I think this is something, you know, that has to be talked about, that there is an obligation on the state to ensure travellers have proper housing, just as there is on every citizen of the country.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've been saying that for some time. And look, Ireland is in the bang in the middle of a housing crisis. I understand that. But long before Ireland was in the housing crisis, travellers have been, you know, because of the little support travellers have been getting around accessing traveller-specific accommodation. And not only traveller-specific accommodation, there is some travellers that want social housing, standard mm-hmm. housing in an estate. Yeah. But it's difficult because there has been cases where settled people living on estates would be asked first if they would allow a traveller to live on their estate, if it's okay with them. You know, we have had stories, people come into us and tell us that kind of stuff as well. So that's another barrier, you know, that travellers have to face when they want to live on a social housing estate. Are they wanted there? Did people agree to them being housed there? I myself was offered a house a number of years ago, probably 30 years ago now. And before I got a chance to accept it, it was vandalised by people in the area so that I couldn't move into it, you know. So, yeah. Like, those are very real stories that we hear all of the time. And again, they create more challenges for us because on one hand, we have no traveller-specific accommodation being planned. We don't have access to the rented market because landlords won't rent to travellers. And with social housing estates that the local authority own, it's probably up to the families that's living on there already if a traveller is allowed in or not. You know, so we have so many barriers and so many hoops to jump. It's next near impossible, to be honest.
Yeah. It is extremely difficult and it has to change. And I really hope that, and I know our listeners will be very supportive and I hope that, you know, this podcast in offering, you know, this discussion and in trying to contribute out there can, you know, help change attitudes and help, mm-hmm. you know, put that more pressure on both society, I think that needs to change, and politics as well and government ultimately and local authorities to take on responsibility. Mm-hmm. How do you yourself keep going? Like, how does it impact on you? You know, you said what you've said to me 30 years ago, you've been talking about it. Mm-hmm. How do you keep going?
It's hard, Rory. I've been saying this for a long time, but we also have to deal with we're dealing with the local authority here in Cork for 30 years, and it's would be typical across the country, you know. I've probably been through three or four maybe city managers at this stage, probably 5 or 6 directors for housing. God knows how many staff members have passed through the traveller accommodation unit. You have to build a relationship with them every time they move and someone else moves in. You have to build that relationship. You have to start from the beginning and you have to work your way through where you feel that you have common ground together, and then that person moves on and you have to start again. So it keeps us on our toes all the time. It makes our work that bit more tedious. And how do I cope with it? I think sometimes I think to myself, look, am I just throwing a pebble into the sea here? But when we all work together, and sometimes we have small wins and we see some changes, it's worth it, you know. And then when you're working within your own community and you see the devastation and you see the effects that these policies have had and the effects that the racism and discrimination is having, and you see that and you want to stay involved and you want to help and support as much as you can. But that keeps me going.
Yeah, no, it is. People... I think, you know, you are an inspiration, and we've a lot of, you know, interesting people on this podcast and people who are really, you know, care and want to change things. But I think, you know, yourself and Rosemary and others, you know, really are, you know, have done incredible work to try and, you know, keep pushing despite it. And it's something that, again, I feel that there is a bit of a change. Mm-hmm. Happening, that at least in a public perception that and public view, and there's a growing, I think, movement in a way, a civil society movement, mm-hmm. of solidarity that is supporting travelers and wants to, you know, is ashamed, like I am, and I've spoken about this, ashamed of how as a country we've treated your community, you know, the settled community, has been state policy, has been mm-hmm. and you know, I hope that it's going to continue, you know, I really do. And you know, I feel that we're going to have to continue talking about it for quite a while yet, but I do feel that we will get there.
I hope so. I hope so, Rory. And like I said, we work very closely and have always worked in solidarity with the settler community. And we have some brilliant allies as well, you know, so it's not all doom and gloom. It's just that it's an uphill struggle all of the time. But sometimes we do plateau for a little while and up again, you know. So
yeah.
Thank you very much for having me on today, and I know I'm not the first traveler to come on and I know that you've been doing your little bit, and if everybody does something like that, it does make a difference in the end, you know. It will make a difference.
Yeah, no, I think so. I really hope so, and I'm delighted to have you on, you know. And it is great to be educated every time as well, you know. We do need an education as well, you know. So yeah, no, listen, thanks so much, Breida, for coming on, and best of luck, and hope to have you on again.
Thank you,
and we hope to see successes in the coming years.
Thank you very much, Rory. Thank you.
Thanks, Breida. And reminder to our listeners, Reboot Republic, you know, this is a podcast that relies on you to, you know, cover the cost of production. You know, we really appreciate all of those who are patrons, who support us. We feel, as you can hear from Breida there, that, you know, this is a space and a podcast that give people like Breida a voice that, you know, allows time to discuss these issues like traveler discrimination, like wider inequality and housing, which we have covered, health. And we do, you know, we know listeners really are enjoying listening to them, find them engaging, you know, find them stimulating and challenging as well. And really, we appeal to you to become a supporter of the Reboot Republic podcast. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Sign up for whatever you can. There's different from €3 a month up to €15 a month, and you can get access to all the podcasts across the Tortoise Shack platform, which are great shows and great viewpoints and different contributions to making this country and this world a better place. And that's really what we're about: social justice, equality, and inclusion. So thank you very much to those of you who are supporters. And if you aren't, please consider becoming a supporter of Reboot Republic. Thank you. And we will talk to you all soon.